So I'm going to read from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 18, text 57. So this particular verse is all about the process of actually becoming conscious of Krishna. There is a process that Krishna describes, and this is the process of becoming conscious of Krishna. It has three stages, known as Sambandha, Avideya, and Prayojana. And practically speaking, that's all the Bhagavad Gita speaks about. Sambandha means the preliminary knowledge so that we become convinced that we should serve Krishna. And then that's called Avideya. And Prayojana is what is the goal, what is the result of serving Krishna. So first we believe Krishna, in Krishna. Then we try to belong to Krishna's family. And then we become pure devotees of Krishna. And this verse summarizes that. Chaitasa, this is 1857. Chaitasa sarva karmani mahi sanyasya matpraha bhava. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So this first part, the first paragraph, most of the first paragraph, or half of the first paragraph, deals with the fact that Krishna owns everything. Simple fact. Easy to forget. Material nature is here to help us forget that. So if you like forgetting Krishna being the proprietor of everything, you can thank material nature for that. She's expert helping us forget. And the devotees are supposed to help us remember that. But of course, if they forget that, then someone has to help them remind them. So Srila Prabhupada's purport says that when one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as the master of the world. Well, of course, we don't act as master of the world, we just act as master of part of the world. We're very humble. If we don't act as, we don't think, well, this is not my house, but this is my body at least. Or it's not my body, it's my mind. And if it's not my mind, it's my false ego. I'm such a great devotee, I don't identify myself with my mind, my body, because I'm so great. That means we're identifying ourselves with our false ego. Just like a servant. Oh, that word, servant. Could you imagine if you meet your friends from school after you graduate, and they say, oh, they tell you, they're, one of them says they're a doctor, the other one says they're an engineer, and they ask you, what are you? You say, I'm a servant. Oh, so sorry. What can we do to help you? Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. Servant has no individual independence. So tell your friends, yes, I'm a servant, and I have absolutely no individual independence. They say, well, we'll call the police. We'll help you. He acts only on the order of the master. Yes, I only act on the order of my master. Oh, call it, he's a terrorist. He's dangerous. Servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. So, that's our first business, is to become convinced that we're actually Krishna's eternal servant. That we may feel ourselves to be independent, but that's really not possible. Just like when Mother Nature calls, no one can say, I'm independent. We have to answer Mother Nature's call. When it's time to sleep, most of us don't think, well, I'm independent, I don't want to sleep. And we think, well, it's what a great opportunity to serve material nature, and I can sleep. And I can dream about how wonderful I am. So, material nature is telling us what to do. We can't say, I've decided not to breathe anymore. I'm not going to eat or sleep. I'm independent. No, we're not independent. We have to serve the material nature. So, we can voluntarily, while we're serving material nature, because none of us can stop serving material nature all at once, but voluntarily we can try to serve Krishna, and by doing that we can find ourselves gradually, a little bit at a time, becoming unaffected by material nature's demands upon us. So one of our methods of seeing if we're making advancement in devotional service and Krishna consciousness is if the material nature is less demanding upon us. Now, Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, he tells us that actually devotional service progresses from becoming free from sinful activities. That's the very basic principle of religiosity. Previously, people who were religious, they were noted for being clean and truthful and merciful and austere. That meant that they were not eating animals, they were not having illicit sex, they were not gambling, and they were not taking intoxication. Otherwise, it's not possible to be austere or clean bodily or mentally, or to be merciful. You can't be merciful if you're cutting the throat of your mother, cow, or bull. So therefore, anyone who claims to be religious and doesn't follow the principles which free us from sinful activity can't really say that their religion is very deep or very profound. So, in the beginning we have to learn that we're a servant, and the more we become a servant of Krishna, the less we become a servant of the material nature. And the more we become a servant of the material nature, the demands of our senses and mind, then the less we become actually aware of Krishna. So a servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. So the next part is Abhideya. What does he do, one who's in consciousness of Krishna? He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. So this may seem like bondage, someone following strictly the orders of someone else, but actually Krishna's orders are all meant to free us from bondage. If you're blind and you have to cross the street, you want to elect someone who has eyes to help you cross the street. If you elect another person who's blind like you are, Andaya Tandira Upagiyamasa Tas, Te Pisha Tantra Urudami Bara, then you're going to get in trouble crossing the street. So Krishna, he has perfect eyes. He knows exactly what we have to do to get out of our material conceptions of life. And if we follow him strictly, we depend upon him, that's the quickest method of getting out of material entanglement. But if we like to be materially entangled, or we don't really believe that it's better to get out of material entanglement, or there's such a thing as material entanglement, then obviously serving Krishna seems to be enslavement. And for one who understands that we're entangled by the material nature, and Krishna knows exactly what we have to do at every moment to get out of that entanglement, then it's not enslavement, it's Krishna is being merciful and saving us. If you're lost in a cave and you're blind and there's many dangers in the cave and someone comes along with a flashlight and knows exactly how to get out of it, to follow them strictly is not enslavement, it's salvation. One may argue that Arjuna is acting under the personal direction of Krishna, but when Krishna is not present, how should one act? So Arjuna had the good fortune that Krishna was sitting on his chariot, and Arjuna could ask Krishna the questions, and Krishna gave perfect answers, perfect questions, perfect answers. So we're not on a chariot most of the time, nor can we speak to Krishna. We can speak to him, we may not get an answer right away. But Krishna is so kind, he's spoken Bhagavad Gita, therefore Prabhupada writes, if one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative Krishna, then the result will be the same. So we have these books, we can read the books, and if we remember what's in the book, we might remember what part of the book applies to our present circumstances. And then to be sure that we're not acting according to our conditioned nature and choosing according to our own present desires, there's representatives of Krishna. So who's a representative of Krishna? One who repeats what Krishna said. Then they're a representative. Now, one who doesn't repeat what Krishna says, they must be representing someone else. Everyone's getting knowledge from someone. So if we're not repeating what Krishna says, then we must be repeating what someone else other than Krishna said. So the representative of Krishna is not that he's so intelligent, he knows everything, and therefore he can tell you his understanding. No, representative of Krishna, he's so intelligent, he knows that whatever information he gets that's valid is coming from Krishna, and therefore he repeats what Krishna says also. But a little bit more in time, place, and circumstance to help the person understand more clearly what part of Krishna's instructions are most applicable for that person at this present moment. The Sanskrit word, now we get into the purpose of what we're doing. Why accept everything belongs to Krishna? Why serve Krishna strictly? So that, what is the result? What can we expect to get? The Sanskrit word matparha is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and accept acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. So this is interesting. We should think, what is my goal in life? Am I living just to satisfy Krishna? Is that why I wake up in the morning just to satisfy Krishna? Is that why I go to sleep at night just to satisfy Krishna? Or do I live, or is it the first French verse I learned was, one should not live to eat, one should eat to live. Are we living to eat? Because if we live to eat prasadam, that's a benefit. But there's more to life than just eating prasadam also. We have to eat prasadam in Krishna consciousness. In any case, am I living just to eat or am I eating to live? What is the purpose of my life? What am I here for? What am I actually expecting? At the end of life, what do I expect? To get a nice, comfortable grave to live in, to sleep in? My life is successful because I have this big tombstone and I have a very comfortable coffin. It has air conditioning and a nice comfortable place to sleep, so I can take rest for a while. Busy life, deserve a rest. In America, they have cemeteries where you can actually, they pipe in music into your coffin. Because after all, it could get boring. And you, before you die, you have to elect either country music or rock. And you can't change the channel. So it's a final decision. So is that the goal of our life, to listen to rock music eternal, you know, for now until the destruction of the universe? What are we here for? What are we trying to accomplish? What is the goal? How do we judge success in our life? In America, they have one bumper sticker, you know, where you put it at the end of the in the tail of the car to express your innermost feelings. So there's one bumper sticker. It says, "Whoever gets the most toys at the end of life wins." In America, they buy these sometimes in outside. Sometimes they buy these big houses with many rooms in it, and they just fill the rooms up with things. I've gone to houses in different places where they have the children. They have their separate room just for their toys. They have a whole room, big room, full of toys. And the parents have their toys. They have their videos and they have their PlayStations, whatever else. They have their toys too. So the children have their toy room and the parents have their toy room too. And their success in life is if you get more toys than your neighbor than you want. So the word matparaha is very important. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. So this requires quite a bit of experience. But at least, if while we're doing whatever service we're doing, whatever sadhana we're doing, what's the harm of doing it to please Krishna? You don't have to pay extra for your sadhana if you do it to please Krishna. It's the same price. So why not try to develop that attitude? Just like we're sitting here, I'm giving the class. Why shouldn't I try to do it just to please Krishna? And why shouldn't the audience try to listen just to please Krishna rather than anything else? There's no harm in it. If you do it, we won't have to call the fire department. I'm trying to please Krishna and some smoke is coming out of my head. It's so difficult. Call the fire department. No, it's actually simple. And while working that way, one should think of Krishna. So how should we think of Krishna? What is the secret of thinking of Krishna? What will help us think about Krishna? If we're trying to become conscious of Krishna, what to think? So I've been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. What's the harm? If Krishna is the controller of everything, everyone is sitting here perfectly according to what Krishna wanted. The exact place we're sitting in this room was all arranged by Krishna. He knew you were going to sit there. As a matter of fact, he told you to sit there. And he's appointed us to discharge his duty of listening to the class, just like they told me to give the class. I think they told me to give the class. I'm pretty sure. Anyhow, I'm doing it anyhow. Krishna's arrangement. So, while acting in such a way, one naturally has to think about Krishna. So we follow the process. First of all, we're hearing the philosophy that Krishna owns everything. So that takes a while to accept, understand. That's all we have to accept. Krishna owns everything here. Therefore, there's nothing to hanker for. There's nothing to lament over. Everything is perfect because it's all Krishna's. We have nothing to gain, and we're not going to lose anything. Because you have nothing, there's nothing. If you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose. So that makes one peaceful. I have nothing to gain, I have nothing to lose. And then we have to find out, since somehow or another we have some influence over things in this world, what does Krishna want me to do with them, since they belong to him? If I find out what Krishna wants me to do with them, and I do it, that's called karma yoga. Actually, it's called jnana yoga. That's real knowledge. That beginning is karma yoga, everything belongs to Krishna. And the next thing I should do, I should find out what Krishna wants me to do with his energy. Then I won't be entangled by it. I'll become free. I'll become aware of my spiritual eternal identity. So that's called Jnana Yoga. And to perform Jnana Yoga, we have to hear from Krishna and from his representatives. Then the next thing is Bhakti Yoga. Since I have to do something for Krishna, I might as well do it to please him. Do it nicely for him, the way he wants me to do it, with care and attention. And what will be the result? While acting in such a way, one naturally has to think about Krishna. So then we'll think about Krishna. That's called Krishna consciousness. So if we actually want to become conscious of Krishna, and becoming conscious of Krishna is not different from associating with Krishna. That's perfection of life. We may not feel it at first, the huge difference between remembering Krishna and not remembering him, but gradually as that remembrance becomes deeper, then we'll feel love. First there'll be peace, then there'll be a growing awareness, then there'll be feelings of love, and everything else will seem insignificant compared to the becoming aware of Krishna. The happiness, the ecstasy, the love will make everything else seem insignificant compared to becoming conscious of Krishna. So, that is perfect Krishna consciousness. We don't have to do anything else. It doesn't matter if we're rich or famous or poor or depressed, whatever. If we just follow that process and become conscious of Krishna, everything we're doing is perfect in Krishna consciousness. Now, the other side, Prabhupada writes, one should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. Like the person who had some puffed rice, and he was walking down the street, he was going to enjoy the puffed rice, but the wind came and took it all away, and he called out, Govinda Bhog. He offered it to Krishna as the wind was taking it away. So the question is, what does whimsically mean? What does it mean to do something whimsically? So, in the 16th chapter, Krishna says, Tri vidam narakasyedam dwaram nashitam atmanaha kama krodha tatala vas tasmat etam trayam trajet. There are three gates to hell: lust, anger, and greed. Every sane person should become free from these gates because they lead to the degradation of the self. In other words, when we stop following the process, when we forget that everything is Krishna's energy, everything belongs to Krishna, when we're not trying to find out what Krishna wants us to do with his energy, and when we're not doing it to please him, to one degree or another, we're caught in the illusory energy. When we forget that everything belongs to Krishna, we're in the mode of ignorance. When we forget that we're supposed to try to find out what to do with his energies to please him, and we act instead to please our senses, we're in the mode of passion. And when we don't do things to please Krishna, then instead we do it just for the dutiful, then we're in the mode of goodness. But still, we're somewhat in ignorance and passion. And when we work to please Krishna, when we accept everything belongs to him, we find out what he wants us to do with his, and we do it to please him, then we're in Krishna consciousness. Then Krishna appears. We can't force Krishna to appear. He's the Supreme Person. We can't force his devotees to appear. They're just as independent as him. But when we follow the process, then out of their mercy, they want to appear. They appear within our memory. And then we can actually experience their presence. Now, if we don't follow that, instead we act it's called whimsically, we must be acting to some degree or another according to lust, anger, or greed. It may not be apparent to us because it's normal for us to act in those modes of ignorance and passion, but that's called whimsical. Whimsical means we don't know what the Shastra says, we don't know what Krishna's representatives say, but we do know what my mind and senses want me to do. One should, however, note that doing some whimsically, you should not offer the result of the Supreme Lord. That we don't like the result, so we offer it to Krishna. Prabhupada gives the example of a blind cow. Someone has a blind cow, doesn't give any milk, so let's give it away in charity. So charitable. I gave away 10 cows today. Of course, they were all blind and couldn't give milk. But I charitably gave it to someone. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service to Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through disciple succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life and Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. So, Sri Rupa Goswami says that our first business is to find a bona fide spiritual master. So who's a bona fide spiritual master? It's one who gives the same orders as Krishna, gives the same instructions as Krishna would give, and he himself, or she herself, they follow those instructions too. They live according to what Krishna tells them to do. So they're an example and an instructor of, therefore they're as a representative of Krishna. And they can tell us, to the best of their ability, what Krishna wants us to do. They don't tell us what Krishna doesn't. They know what Krishna wants. They know that ultimately Krishna wants us to become Krishna conscious, to always remember him and never forget him. So they don't tell us to go to the movies and watch the Avatar movie because it's spiritual. They don't tell us to go out and gamble it in Las Vegas to make some money for the temple. No, they know what Krishna wants and they repeat what Krishna wants, and they themselves don't go to Las Vegas and gamble at the casinos to make money for Krishna. And hopefully they don't go to watch the Avatar movie either. Although it's a spiritual movie because it has the name Avatar. No, they're aware of what Krishna wants, and to the best of their ability, they can instruct their followers so that their followers become conscious of Krishna. And they learn the process of becoming conscious of Krishna. It's not difficult. It's not that it's complicated. It's very simple. But if we don't follow it, then the material nature makes everything complicated for us. If we follow the process, everything becomes simple, and if we don't follow the process, everything, including our material life, will become very, very complicated. Material nature is meant to become entangle us to the point that we enter, that we become less and less aware of actually what our best interest is and what reality is. So I'll stop there. I'll read the verse again that I read. Chaitasa sarva karmani maya sanyasya matraha puryogam upashitya matshita ksaratam bhava. In all activities just depend upon me and work always under my protection. Such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So we should accept, understand and accept everything belongs to Krishna, and therefore be willing to utilize all our resources in Krishna's service, and then do it in such a way as to try to please him, to have the mood that I'm doing it just to satisfy Krishna. Then we'll think about Krishna, and that's perfect Krishna consciousness. So any questions? Thank you. Comments? Challenges? Yes. His hand is up.
Thank you for an inspiring lecture. I would just like to ask, when you mentioned the importance that we do everything we do for the pleasure of Krishna, I would just like to ask for some advice as how can we really make this desire to to je second side Krishna stronger and stronger, but strengthens this sincerity of this desire to satisfy Krishna.
Well, to satisfy Krishna means to follow his instructions. So at first we may not know so many instructions, but still if we know something, we do it. As Srila Prabhupada once said in a lecture, Srila Rupa Goswami says in the Nectar of Devotion that one should come to Mangalarti, rise early and come to Mangalarti. So Prabhupada said, if you do that, then you're serving the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami. So the more we understand what Krishna wants, and the more we do it, the more we're satisfying Krishna. And the more we do that, then the more Krishna reciprocates and satisfies us. Krishna has unlimited potencies that can unlimitedly satisfy us. And Krishna will utilize them to satisfy us in every respect. And the more we become satisfied by satisfying Krishna, the more we become anxious to satisfy him, even knowing at first that by doing so we'll become satisfied. If just like some people come to the temple and they put a euro and 10 cents into the hundi or the donation box, because they know it's going to satisfy Krishna, and when Krishna is satisfied, that 1 euro will turn into 1 million. So we find in India where people are aware of that, they give nice donations to the devotees. Not that they're overwhelmed with love for Krishna, but they know if I give 1,000 euros, it's going to be $1 billion. So let me give 1,000, it's a good investment. So investing in satisfying Krishna is a good investment, because we're dealing with a person who owns everything. We have 1 euro, but he owns everything, and he's very generous, so it's a good business to satisfy Krishna. At first, eventually we'll fall in love with him, and we won't fall. But then that may not happen all at once. Anything else? There's a story of the thief. He went to a lecture, Sunday feast class, I heard. And he heard that in Vrindavan there's this boy named Gopal, and that his mother puts on these jewels on him that are very costly, priceless jewels. So the thief thought, let me go to Vrindavan and find this Gopal and steal all his jewels. So he was very anxious to find Gopal, probably more anxious than we are. And so he looked everywhere, where is Gopal? Gopal, he was shouting Gopal everywhere. So then finally Gopal appeared. This thief is really anxious to see me, I must reciprocate. So then the thief said, give me your jewels. And Gopal said, I can't. My mother Jasoda will be angry. So there's an argument going on for some time. And finally the thief fell in love with Krishna. And Krishna said, all right, I'll give you the jewels. And the thief said, no, no, thank you. I don't need the jewels. I just need you. So we become anxious to get the jewels from Krishna. Ultimately, we'll become more interested in Krishna than the jewels. Anything else? Okay. Bhagavad Gita ki jai.